Okay, I think we should start. It's already a little bit late. So just a quick introduction of the four authors of this paper. Jim Lee, a PhD candidate from UNSW. Benjamin, who can't join us today. Benjamin Vanzi, he's Professor of Actuarial Studies from University of Melbourne. Dr. Bernard Wong, Head of School Risk and Actuarial Studies, UNSW, and also Greg Taylor, Professor of School of Risk and Actuarial Studies, UNSW. So Jim is going to take us through the presentation, and there should be some time left for Q&A as well.
Yeah, thanks everyone. So it's my great honor to present here, and also on behalf of my co-authors. Yeah. So our presentation topic is including climate change in dynamic financial analysis. So thanks so much. Yeah. So I'll just start my presentation. Yeah. So yeah, before we made a presentation, we want to make the disclaimer that our views presents here are solely represents of us, which is the authors, and do not reflect the views of our affiliated organizations. Yeah, so first I want to present an introduction of this work and also the motivation behind this project. Yeah, so we can all know that the impact of climate change are very comprehensive and could be multifaceted. So we can see there could be more extreme weather events, for example, rising inflation pressure. There could be also impact on the investment returns. All of these factors can ultimately affect the financial health of our general insurance market. So in order to address these challenges, we need an integrated framework to comprehensively assess the impact of climate change. However, like most of studies, at least in literature, tend to focus on the individual impact from climate change. For example, some study may look at the impact of climate change on the catastrophic loss, and some may be looking at the impact of the investment return. But we want a comprehensive framework to comprehensively assess the full impact of climate change across the whole balance sheet of general insurance. So in practice, dynamic financial analysis is typically used by general insurance to assess the comprehensive impact of the financial impact. However, like the traditional DFA, at least in literature, which is publicly available, does not account for the impact of climate change. So this provides us motivation for our work. So to fill this gap, we develop a climate-dependent DFA framework, which have several of the desirable features. So firstly, it captures the comprehensive impact from climate change on both the assets and liability of general insurance, and it is all based on the very tractable model, so it's very transparent and interpretable. And second feature is that it addresses the uncertainty of climate change impacts and also tailored to the general insurance sector. So we also provide an illustrative example of the implementation of our proposed framework based on the Australian data, so which can provide some insights into the long-term impact of climate change on the general insurance market. And finally, our model is fully open source, and you can download it from our GitHub page, so which means you can potentially customize this to suit your specific needs, and you can also make improvement based on that. So before we delve into the details, so I firstly want to clarify the scope of this study. So firstly, we aim to provide a general framework, and we tend to focus on the national level and the long-term impact of climate change on the general insurance sector. And therefore, we consider the insurance-specific modeling to be out of scope. However, that would be a very interesting extension of our baseline framework. So secondly, we seek to provide an illustrative example about how to demonstrate the application of our proposed framework. And this is not intended to be a complete predictive analysis for our chosen country, which is Australia in this case. And finally, so here we want to provide a baseline model. So which means we do not incorporate any policy effects, such as the potential reinsurance pool, etc. But it can be left for future research, and you can compare different impact from different policy by comparing that with our baseline results. Yeah, so firstly, a very key input to our framework is the set of climate scenarios. So I will spend some time here to introduce them. So we will use the shared social economy pathway, so which are the underpinning climate scenario of the IPCC report. So here we consider the four main scenarios. So the first scenario is the S&P 8.5 scenario, or also called the fossil fuel development. So under this scenario, yes, envisions a world with very rapid economy development, driven by high competitive market and also innovation, which results in the highest economic growth, as we can see from the graph on the left. However, this rapid economic growth is assumed to rely on fossil fuel development, so it also results in the highest average temperature increase. So on the other side, for the SCP 7.0 scenario, it describes a world characterized with very poor economic growth because of the regional conflicts, so which results in the lowest economic growth among all the four scenarios. And because of those regional conflicts, environmental concerns remain a very low priority. So in that case, it also results in the second highest increase in temperature. So on the other hand, the SCP 2.6 scenario envisions a world with progressive economic growth and also improving environmental conditions because of advancement in renewable energy technology. So under this scenario, it has the second highest economic growth, while also the lowest increase in temperature. And finally, we have the SCP 4.5 scenario. So this describes a middle of the road scenario, which assumes like a moderate economic growth and also a moderate increase in temperature. So those social economic projections from the climate scenario available for the and the country level. So for the country level GDP projection, they will start from the historical value and they are assumed to converge toward a global frontier based on the scenario narrative. For example, under the SCP 8.5 scenario, they assume like a very high openness to trade. So in that case, the conversion to the global frontier will be very fast. And on the other hand, for the SCP 7.0, assume like a very high trade barrier. In that case, it just has a very slow conversion to the global frontier. So so here, the figure on the left shows the SCP projection of GDP in Australia. So which broadly follow the trends of the global GDP trends we have seen before. And we also have the emission pathway derived from those economy assumptions. So this will be then serve as an input to the high-resolution climate model, which is usually at a gridded cell level. Yeah, so finally, I will introduce the overview of a framework. So starting from the top of the diagram, we'll use the projections from the CIMIC climate models of the climate variable as well as projection of social economy variable from underlying the SCP scenario as an input. So this will be then serve as input to simulate other variables within the DFA framework based on a cascading structure. And firstly, we pretend the raw forecast for the CIMIC model. So this will be then used to simulate the number and the severity of major hazard events. So by aggregating those loss, we can then derive the market catastrophe loss. So from the liability side, those market catastrophe insurance loss will be then used to generate a claimed liability of individual insurers based on their market shares and also the reinsurance structure. And on the asset side, the market catastrophe loss in combination with the projection of GDP from the SCP scenarios will be jointly used to simulate our investment returns. So finally, the outputs from the assets and the liability module will be used to simulate the surplus or the capital of general insurance. By aggregating them, we can then provide a sense of measurement of the financial performance of the overall market. Yeah, so after introducing the overall framework, I will then delve into the detail of the individual module. So firstly, I will introduce our climate module. So we will use a rock forecast from the CIMIC-6 ensemble. So this comprises a set of global climate module that simulate the climate conditions in history, present and future conditions under different emission scenario, and it's also the underpinning model that I use in the IPCC report. So however, one problem with these forecasts is that they are deterministic. However, for actual applications, for example, for economic capital modeling, we not only care about mean, we also care about the volatility as well as the higher quantile, etc. So which means we need somehow to assess the stochastic. We somehow need to assess the uncertainty of the prediction. So to introduce randomness into the raw climate forecast, we will adapt a very simple but effective approach. So in the first step, we will sample uniformly from the CIMIC-6 ensemble for the raw forecast, and we also apply the bias correction. So in this step, we can capture somehow of the model uncertainty of the climate model. And in the second step, based on the sample model, we will sample a trajectory from its historical residual distribution. So in this step, we account for the aleatory uncertainty. So our final simulated variable will be the mean forecast from the climate model plus the simulated noise in the second step. So in the next section, I will introduce our hazard model. So to select a hazard model, we get a range of choice. So from the least granular approach, we have the traditional climate risk model, where we just simply assume a constant frequency or constant severity for the distribution parameter. Despite simplicity, however, it does not consider the impact of climate change. On the other hand, we also got the CAP models. So this is a very granular model, and it is very powerful in terms of it can provide a very high resolution prediction. However, those models are mostly proprietary and vendor models, which means they're often not publicly available, so we do not have access to it. So in order to strike a balance, we use like a weather-dependent collective risk model approach, so which we try to build on tractable statistical models to capture the climate impacts on the claims. So in essence, so each hazard's frequency and severity are modeled using a Poisson and log normal distribution. So this distribution assumption are chosen based on historical data. And the distribution parameters are then modeled as a function of the relevant meteorological covariance for each hazard type. So the next question is to how to select the meteorological variable. So we select the meteorological covariance based both on the physical mechanism driving each hazard type and also the statistical model validation. So for example, for the model the flood risk, we use the extreme precipitation. For bushfire, we use the fire weather index. And for tropical cyclone and storm, we use the sea surface temperature and sea level pressure, because like tropical cyclone usually fall under the high sea surface temperature and low pressure system. So however, like those meteorological covariance here used mainly serve as a proxy for the climate risk. And here we focus on the national level impact. However, if you want to use for more granular decision making, such as portfolio management or pricing of individual properties, you may need a much granular model than our current approach. For example, you can replace the hazard model here with your proprietary or vendor CAD model where you have license from. Yeah. So, and finally, for the non-climate related and non-catastrophic losses, we are using 3D distribution to model that, and we assume they are stationary. Yeah, so here we present a calibration and simulation flow for our climate and hazard module. So during the historical period, we calibrate the hazard model by regressing the observed hazard frequency and severity over the observed meteorological variables. So as for the climate module, we derive the bias correction and obtain the residual distribution by comparing the historical backcast from Simisys ensemble with the observed meteorological variable. So in the future period or the scenario period, so we start from obtain the raw forecast from the Simisys ensemble. So this raw forecast and then generate simulated meteorological variable based on the bias correction and the residual distribution calibrated on the historical data. So this simulated meteorological variables and then used as input to simulate the hazard loss based on the calibrated hazard model based on the historical data. Yeah, so now we turn our attention to the asset size, because both assets and liabilities may be important to assess the overall financial performance. So we start with the macroeconomy module. So firstly, we have the inflation rate. So we model the inflation rate as a component of the baseline inflation plus a climate overlay. So for the baseline inflation, we just model by mean reverting AR1 process, which is the very conventional approach in ESG or economy scenario generator literature. So for the climate overlay, we assume it is determined by the temperature anomaly based on the calibrated relationship between temperature anomalies and its inflation impact in cost at all. So the rationale here is that the rising temperature anomalies can affect agriculture production, and the affected agriculture production could be ultimately reflected in the food prices. And this can translate into our headline inflation, because the food is a very component of the headline inflation. So beyond the inflation rate, we also got a risk-free real interest rate. So we model it as a function of the potential GDP growth and the residual components. So the residual component basically capture the residual factor within the real rates that are not explained by the growth, economic growth. So the relationship between real rates and the potential GDP growth is then calibrating using the historical data, and the residual component is assumed to model by mean reverting AR1 process. So the assumption here is that the higher the potential economic growth, the more confident the consumer gains. So they will consume more in future and save less now. So that will push out the saving rate to attract saving. So that's the rationale for this one. And for projection, we'll use the potential GDP growth rate underlying each scenario, which is sourced from the SP database. So as for the equity module, so we assume the general insurance hold to proof for portfolio, which one is the general portfolio and one is the bond portfolio. So for the general portfolio return, we assume they are driven by changes in economy output and climate-related damage under each scenario. And for the bond portfolio return, we assume it is further driven by changes in oil and gas production. So the simulation flow for the portfolio returns can be outlined in the diagram below. So we start from the market collateral of insurance loss. So this is obtained as an output from our hazard model. So this will be then converted to the total economy loss for hazard events by applying a multiplier based on the historical data. So this total economy loss will be then subtracted from the total production from each SP scenarios to derive the production available for consumption after climate damage. So this adjusted growth will be then used to simulate the operating profit growth, and we also applied a random shock to the profit growth, which is calibrated on historical data. So for the brown portfolio, we assume its operating profit growth is further affected by changing oil and gas productions underlying the SP scenarios assumption. So finally, the operating profit growth we then use to simulate the excess equity returns, and we also apply a random shock to the excess equity return to capture the market volatility, and it's calibrated based on the historical data. Yeah. So that's for our equity model. So before we perform the simulation, I want to explain some of our main assumptions. So these are based on the general insurance market statistic, APRA, and some industry knowledge. So for the market assumption, we assume there are four market leaders, which comprise 80% of the market. And there are also four medium-sized insurers and 12 small insurers that comprise the remaining of the market shares. And for the premium assumption, we assume it is composed of a risk premium, which is the reflected expected claim cost plus a loadings that reflects the standard deviation. And we assume all the contracts are repriced annually. So this is the approach use, which is generally used in practice. And we do not assume rate regulations in our simulations. And for our reinsurance assumption, we assume the whole excess of loss contracts with excess and limit apply and the firm level to account for the impact of reinsurance capital on the price. We adjust the reinsurance price via negative exponential function, which reflecting the higher premium markups linked to risk premium when reinsurance solvency level decrease. So finally, all of those climate impact for individual model will translate into the surplus or capital of the general insurance, which can be illustrated in the equation here. So because for general insurance, like both return and risk are critical measure of their financial health. So for the return measure, we use the expected surplus, which is taken to be the average cost of simulated capital. And for the risk measure, first we will use the insolvency probability, which is just the proportion of simulation that go below zero. And we also use the deficit given insolvency ratio, so that capture the proportion of the deficit over the total claims liability when insurance default or become insolvent. Yeah. So then I will briefly explain our data source for calibration. So we source a range of the data source, and a full description of that can be available in our GitHub page. So for the climate one, we use the ERA5 reanalysis data for calibration in the historical period, and we use the projection for a semi-6 ensemble. And for the nature catastrophe, we use the ICA dataset. So this is a publicly available dataset from Insurance Council of Australia, and it provides records and description of natural disaster occurring in Australia. For the macroeconomy data, for historical period, we use the RBA cash rates, CPI inflation rate published by ABS, and also the World Development Indicator from World Bank. And for the production, we will seek the production of GDP from the SP database. So for the financial data, we will seek the corporate earning from the ABS business indicators. And as for the equity returns, we use the All Ordinary Shares Index to calibrate that. So for the insurance market statistic, we use the quarterly general insurance performance statistical database. So this also publicly available from APA, and you can download from the website. Yeah. So finally, I will present the main finding of the study. So again, this is an illustrated example of how this framework could be applied, and it does not serve as a complete predictive analysis for our chosen country. So as for the investment return, so for the cumulative investment return, we can see it is highest under the SP 8.5 scenario, followed by the SP 7.0 scenario. So this is mainly consistent with the trends of economic growth assumption underlying each climate scenarios. And for the underwriting loss, so this one is a bit interesting. So and the average level, which is shown in the solid lines, we can see it is negative, which indicates a profit, and it's pretty consistent across the scenario. So this is because at the average level, the premium is can cover the expected claim cost, and also we apply a premium loading. In addition, we assume the premium reprice annually. So in that case, the premium reflect the change in the expected or average claim cost each year. So and the mean level, we don't have can't see much of the difference here. However, if we look at the higher quantiles, they are pretty similar initially, but they rise substantially, particularly under the high emission scenario, such as the SP 8.5 or SP 7.0 scenarios. So this reflects the increasing volatility and the higher extreme quantile of underwriting loss under those high emission scenario. So if we look at the lowest emission scenario, i.e. the SP 2.6 scenario, we can see there's no material change in either the mean and the high quantile of the underwriting loss, because it assumes a very low increase in temperature with improving environmental condition, which is described as a sustainability path. So as an overall financial performance, we assess it both on returns and risk. So from the return perspective, we assess it based on the expected market surplus. So as we can see from the figure on the right, so it is the we have the highest expected market surplus under the SP 8.5 scenario, followed by SP 2.6, 4.5, and SP 7.0 scenario. So these are consistent with the ranking and the trends of economic growth underlying each SP scenarios. So this makes sense because at the mean level, our premiums are generally offset the underwriting loss and average levels, which we can see from the previous slide, because our repricing assumption and also premium loading. So in that case, in the mean supply, it's primarily driven by the investment return, which is closely tied with the economic growth assumption underlying each climate scenarios. So in that case, the key driver of difference of the expected market surplus underlying each scenario is by their different economic growth assumption. So next, we turn our attention to the risk measure. So which first we assess based on the insolvency risk. So if we look at the insolvency risk, it is highest under the SP 7.0 scenario, followed by SP 4.5 and 2.6 scenario. So it's interesting, as although the hazard loss is not the highest under the SP 7.0 scenario, it has the highest insolvency probability. This is because the poor economy assumption for the SP 7.0 scenario, as well as its second highest cat loss, collectively erode profit and slow down the capital accumulation. So in that case, it lead to the highest insolvency probabilities. And this is actually consistent with narrative, which assume both high mitigation and high adaptation challenges. So, interesting, as for the SP8.5 scenario, so which is a scenario you should associate with the highest hazard loss, actually farming has a pretty low insolvency risk. So this may be explained by its stronger investment return driven by its very rapid economic growth assumption in relation to its growth in the underwriting loss, as we can see from the previous slides. Therefore, it leads to rapid accumulation of capital under this scenario to buffer against loss in the later period, so which results in the very pretty low insolvency probability. However, given insolvency, it has the most severe impact, as we can see from the market deficit given insolvency ratio, which we can see there are pretty large spikes under the SP8.5 scenario, which is marked by the brown curve. This indicates that a given insolvency, it has the most severe impact of the under the SP8.5 scenario because it's a very high loss over the distribution tails. So we can see like they're very balanced. The risk returns are more balanced under the SP8.6 scenario, which is described as the sustainability path. So finally, so I'm going to like describe some of the conclusion from this study. So firstly, we have proposed a climate-dependent DFA framework, so which have the following desirable features. So firstly, it uses an interconnected structure, which seeks to capture the comprehensive impact from climate change on both the assets and liability of general insurance. And it also embeds the stochastic simulations within the climate scenario analysis, so which can capture uncertainty in climate change impacts and also tailored to general insurance application because we want to capture the volatility of the prediction. And third one, it provides a multi-year framework, so which can capture the long-term and accumulated impact from the climate change. So we think this is quite important because if we just assess from a one-time shock base, we may see the impact from SP7.0 may not be that large because it doesn't have the high physical risk. However, if we assume it's based on a multi-year framework, we can see that its performance is quite low under this scenario because it assumes a slow accumulation of capital due to its both poor economic growth and relatively high hazard risk. So that's highlight the benefit of using a multi-year framework. And it's also built on trackable models, so which means they are all interpretable and transparent. So we have illustrated the application of our proposed framework using the Australian data. So where we have found the worst risk return outcome is occurring in the SP7.0 scenario due to its both poor economic growth and second high physical risk. And for the SP8.5 scenario, which is usually described as the scenario with a high physical risk, we have the lowest insolvency risk because driven by its very high economic growth assumption. However, it also have the most severe impact upon insolvency. Finally, for the SP2.6 scenario, which envisions a world with progressive economic growth and low physical risk, we have a more balanced risk and return profile. So the next slide is that how our research could potentially help you. So firstly, our findings highlight that the interaction between economic growth and the physical risk is very crucial in shaping our general insurance risk and return profile. So therefore, it is important to incorporate both the economy and the physical narrative of climate scenarios when using them to assess the climate change impact on your assets and liabilities. So second one is that our proposed climate-dependent DFA offer like a general baseline framework for assessing the climate impact, and it is also fully open source. And based on that, you can extend it to a lot of interesting ways, and you can also explore different applications. So first potential extension, you can explore how different regulatory intervention, for example, if there could be like further nationalization of peril risk, like the reinsurance pool, and this and how that will affect the performance of general insurance by comparing them to our baseline results. And you also know much, much better than us about your own risk profile, as well as your exposure. So therefore, you can develop your own customized fund level DFA model by adapting the framework to your specific risk profile and exposure, which can enable you to test different management strategy under different climate scenarios. For example, strategy, asset allocations, reinsurance program design, or perhaps the design of your asset and recovery plan under different scenarios. And the third potential extension, you can potentially broaden the framework by incorporating additional elements, such as you can explore using your vendor CAD models to replace our hazard model, because the CAD model may provide a much granular resolution. And you can also consider a wider range of asset classes and risk type. For example, impressive general insurance may also hold more asset class, like property or... So for example, impressive general insurance may hold more asset class than the two described in our research, like you may also hold properties or infrastructure, equity, etc. So all of these asset class can potentially subject to the impact for climate change. And you may also face more risk types, such as operation risk or the credit risk of the reinsurance. So those can be also affected by climate change. And there could be more potential interesting extension of this one. And finally, I will mention some of the reliance and the limitations of our research. So the current modeling framework uses some necessary simplification to manage the complexity and scale of climate risk assessment, because the topic of climate change is very big and there's a lot of aspects of climate change. So we have to make some of this simplification to make it functionable. So however, which means it also introduced some limitation. So firstly, our projection relies on economy and environmental assumptions from the SSP scenario, which have inherent limitation. For example, there could be the possibility of economic collapse or the complete meltdown of the economy system due to the climate tipping point. However, this is not reflected or captured in the current SSP scenario's underlying economy assumption. So this could may present a future direction for the interdisciplinary research and collaboration. So, and second one is the model focused on the Australian disaster and exclude global spillover effect. However, the disaster happening in other places in the world can also have an impact on Australia because of the international trade and also the supply chain system. And the third one is that our current analysis does not account for the potential loss of business volume reflecting from the rising premium. So if the premiums become unaffordable, which particularly might be an issue under the SP 7.0 scenario, because assume both are low income growth and high physical risk, that may cause a potential loss in the business value. So we leave those very interesting questions for further research. Yeah. And finally, our model are fully developed in R and is also fully available from our GitHub page. And you can also scan the QR code to access the model and download the data. Yeah, thank you very much.
Hello. Yep. Okay. There are a few questions. Thank you for the thought-provoking presentation. Yeah, it's a really hot topic. Okay. A few questions here. Oh, this is the last session. One from the first one. Thank you. There are some interesting results. Have you considered the potential for stranded assets and associated investment losses? If yes, how? If no, why?
Yeah, so thanks for your questions. So that's a very interesting one. So for the stranded assets, so that may be more related to the transition risk. So, for example, there could be changes in the brown output. For example, on the SP 2.6 scenario, we assume a transition from the brown output to the clean energy. So, in that case, if we have exposure to those brown assets, we can potentially face an investment loss. So in that, our model is captured in this one. So, we assume there's, so we use the oil and gas production or oil and gas output production from SP scenarios. So, which they will vary based on the narrative. For example, for SP216, they will have the lowest oil and gas output projection, whereas it will be the highest under the SP8.5 scenarios. And we assume the change in the oil and gas production is reflected in the operating profit growth of the brown firms. And this will be translated into the investment returns of them. So in that case, we somehow capture the impact of the stranded assets and based on the changing oil and gas production assumption in each climate scenarios. And you can also explore that using other scenarios, for example, the NGFS or the net greening financial system scenario. So this one, also those scenarios, they may assume like more severe transition risk in terms of the stranded asset. Here we mostly focus on the fiscal risk. And so we use the SP scenarios. But you can like assess the impact and compare that by different across different climate scenarios. Yeah.
Next question.
Yeah.
Have you considered embedding uncertainty in our climate path into the stochastic model itself, rather than having separate scenarios, or thought about the relative risk of different scenarios and intermediate ones?
Yeah. So thanks for your question. Yeah. As for the first one, this is a very interesting question. Yeah. So in one approach, we can like simulate the for example, the GDP growth into very different paths using statistical models. Yeah. So in that case, we can capture the full distribution of that. However, like one potential limitation is that because we also have the underlying narrative in each climate scenario, and there does not have like a very linear relationship between the economic growth and temperature output. Because if we consider the SP2.6 scenario, it has the second highest economic growth, but actually have the lowest increase in temperature. This is because it also assumes the advancement in the renewable energy technology, etc., which results in a relatively fast economic growth, but in a very environmental friendly way. So in that case, it is might be difficult to simulate the future production of GDP based on the distribution calibrated from the historical data, because it might not fully reflect those narrative. But we have somehow taken into account the stochastic of the simulation by introducing a randomness of our simulated or climate variables by comparing the backcast with the observed historical data. Yeah.
One more question here. What do the results imply for insurance premiums, affordability and accessibility in high-risk areas? What could this mean for non-insured losses?
Yeah, so thanks a lot for your question. So this one actually presents us reliance and the limitation of the current work, because this will be a very interesting question to explore in future. And there's also like a climate vulnerability assessment conducted by APRA on the general insurance, so which they seek to assess the insurance affordability based on different climate scenario. And for example, it is expressed as a ratio of the premiums as a to the weekly incomes to capture the affordability metrics of the insurance. And yeah, so it will be very interesting to combine this study and also the study conducted by APRA to see how those can jointly factor together. Yeah.
Okay, we've got one more question. I'll cover that as well, and then that's we'll call it finish yeah. for this session. So what do the results imply in terms of reinsurance prices and capacity?
So thanks for this very interesting question. This one, yeah, so because we also, I think for the reinsurance, they can also follow a somehow similar mechanism, because both of their assets and liabilities can be also affected by the climate change impact as general insurance. For example, the higher physical risk, especially in the higher quantile, because they got the assets of loss contract, so they will potentially more risk transferred to them. And they also invest their assets into the market, which can be also faced by the climate risk. So that could also translate it into the reinsurance capital. So as the reinsurance capital fall, it also restrain their capacity. So in that case, it can lead to a rise in the reinsurance premium and vice versa. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation.
You.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Greg.